and another man who did all the packaging. In the toy industry, you can readily see the success of your design. Prototypes are shown at each toy fair, which always happens in end of February and March, and the success of your design, you know immediately. Before you go into production even, you show prototypes and you see the reaction. So I found this a very encouraging and enlightening thing after the Lowy years, where you have to wait years and years to see whether anything you did was successful or not. And by the time you found out it was not, it was too late. But in the toy industry, you come up with prototypes and you show it to the main buyers of Sears, of JCPenney, of the large buyers, and they are bright enough and smart enough and have enough experience to tell you, oh, that's going to be hot. Mm-hmm. So this was completely novel to me, and I enjoyed it very much. I, in the design approach for the sporting goods division, for instance, I found out that the backboards for basketball have never really been designed. The hoops for basketball have never been designed. I came up with new features which I hold patents for, mm-hmm. and the weightlifting equipment and had never been designed, so I came up with the cement-filled plastic weights, which were blow-molded somewheres and then shipped empty to the other side of the country and filled there with cement, so you didn't have to pay for the dead weight when you shipped them out. Mm-hmm. So all these things had never been thought about, and I found all these little loopholes where we could add and take advantage of. Mm-hmm. A little later, the company bought Jim Dandy, the best and best known manufacturer of play gyms and outdoor play yard equipment. Again, I found that very little really had been designed and novel, so I came up with many, many new additions, and my association with Jim Dandy went to about a half a year ago, which is really 22 years. Mm-hmm. And we upped their production from 8 million yearly to well over 20, which is unheard of in a play yard equipment mm-hmm. Manufacturing outfit. When Lionel went into, Gilbert went into bankruptcy, mm-hmm. We bought the remaining parts, which were the chemistry sets and erector sets, mm-hmm. Which we kept to the very last. And I was happy to add to erector many new items and features. The chemistry sets I hated from the first to the last day because they are not for little hands. We had so many lawsuits and fires that the burners would make, and
caustic chemicals.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. But they kept it because it was a good seller. Mm-hmm. Then our company was bought by CBS. CBS is, doesn't need to be described, but they had a toy division, Creative Playthings, and some building blocks. And CBS bought our entire outfit, and shortly after they bought Gabriel, they bought Ideal Toy. Ideal, a major manufacturer in dolls and novelty items. They became famous when Evel Knievel lent his name to one of their performing dolls. But the CBS somehow mismanaged the toy division to a point that they were to go under. And as of about half a year ago, they stopped all production, sold their assets, part of them, the preschool division, to Hasbro, while the division I handled in later years, the Jim Dandy, they just let die. Mm. let everybody go, and that was the end of it. I personally have continued to work on some of my own accounts to keep busy and keep my hands in design, and I'm currently designing some fireproof safes, and a new novel approach to safeguarding computer tapes and from robbery and from fire, which is a good assignment, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
Mm-hmm. What, looking back on your career as a designer of children's, I guess they'd say toys, children's appliances and toys, what was it about the industry that attracted you? And what was the most satisfying aspect of it?
What attracted me, first of all, is my close relationship to my friend Morton Levy. He asked me to help them when they first got started, Levy and Fryer. They were national reps. They took the output of various plants and sold them. And they were convinced if the items they sold were better designed, they could sell most of them, mm-hmm. more of them. Mm-hmm. And they came to me and said, would I design a new babe car seat? Would I design Replogle globes to sell more? Would I design a new little iron for little girls mm-hmm. that's more handsome? Would I design this and that and their showroom in addition? Uh-huh. Which I did. Mm-hmm. And all while I was at Lowy, all freelance work. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated with the toy design mm-hmm. and found it very challenging. And we had many competitors mm-hmm. Of much, much larger companies, and it was fun to outsell them mm-hmm. by a better design. And when I finally joined them permanently, the challenge became even larger. And as I mentioned before, from a 3 to 4 million yearly sales mm-hmm. to over 150 million in 15 years, ain't hay. That mm-hmm. was That's unbelievable mm-hmm. growth. And for the second time around, I would never go back into the toy industry. It's a cutthroat business.
Is it?
You come out with a good design, and you may rest assured that the following year somebody is to undersell you and copy your design. To patent a design is almost useless. Mm-hmm. Design patents aren't worth the paper they're written on. Mm-hmm. Mechanical patents are good. Mm-hmm. So
The way the law is written?
A design patent is for a specific design. Mm-hmm. The moment you change two lines on it, it's not the design. One of my freelance jobs was to design a blender, mm-hmm. like the wiring blender, yeah. for Puerto Rico, where they have very little electric power but plenty of water power. Mm-hmm. So this was to be water operated. Mm-hmm. I designed the item, it worked beautifully, but all of a sudden I was stopped because the little bushing that has the outside attachment to the inside blade mm-hmm. was patented by Mr. Waring. And we couldn't do it, so it took me 10 minutes to change the design and got our own patents on it. So patents are there to be bypassed or improved or what have you. I have many, many patents, and mm-hmm. but design patents, you have to take them out for an automobile. The moment you come out with a new design, you take out a design patent, so nobody can copy the Avanti SS mm-hmm. or the, you have to, that's standard procedure. Mm-hmm. But a design patent is to discourage somebody, possibly, yeah. to copy you. Mm-hmm.
Well, the toy industry is fascinating, is it not? In terms of its the impact that you have, in terms of the incredible sales that it engenders to fund parents. I know when my children growing up, we bought them all sorts of new toys as they came out. The business must have been limitless to a really creative outfit.
It is really limitless. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, mm-hmm. Which was much handicapped in later years by the safety programs of the government. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we went through at the Jim Dandy plant,
yes,
to abide by all the safety regulations, mm-hmm. we had to change tooling and angles where triangular shapes were such that a kid could put a head through but couldn't get out fast enough. And if you look at a gym set, there's nothing but triangles. So they had to be all opened up, all the designs had to be changed, and to abide by the laws. There was never a law.
It was just a set of regulations?
It was a regulation. It was never a law. Mm. However, the moment a big buyer would buy your merchandise, and you did not include all this safety measurements in it, the whole line would be obsolete. It could be thrown out. But it's never a law, but you have to abide by it.
The question of, you might explain a little bit what the Jim Dandy line was in terms of...
Jim Dandy was the best known and quality line of outdoor gym sets for little people to swing on, climb on, slide on. And we had, what I saw in the competition, by far the best made sets of the heaviest steel, the best finish of welded rather than screwed on top brackets that held the swings and lawn glides. We had a whole research department to keep ahead of the paint finishes to see how the paint would stand up in other different weather conditions all over the United States. And we kept ahead of everybody. And our biggest client, of course, was JCPenney. They took the entire line and in their catalog. It's all Jim Dandy stuff. Of course, now it's all dead. I don't know who's they're using. We were always a few steps ahead of everybody else. And as I said before, in the toy industry, we come out with a new item. The next year, everybody else would have it.
Yeah.
And the last few years were very thrilling for me because all of a sudden CBS decided to go into the wooden gyms, which cost a lot of money, from $600 to well over $1,000 a piece. And I had to design the wooden gyms, and which were made in one of their plants in Herndon, Pennsylvania. The outfit that made the famous Creative Playthings, little wooden train sets and building blocks. And I had great fun designing the very successful wooden gyms. But again, from one day to the next, they closed the plant, and so finished. Incredible.
Yes.
Incredible.
Why would CBS have done that? Can you
The reason for CBS doing it was the takeover bid by Turner. When Turner came, CBS didn't want to be taken over, and they bought back a lot of their own stock at tremendous expense. All of a sudden, they found themselves short of funds, and in order to not lose any more money, got rid of all not producing divisions. And they got rid of the toy division and a few other divisions.
They had to do the same thing that they were accusing Turner of thinking of doing.
So that was Turner, I think, is the reason for it all.
Fascinating. From architecture to all sorts of product designs, you found that your last assignment was one of the most satisfying.
Yep. I did a lot of architecture since I'm in this country.
Yes, you haven't mentioned that, really.
It's my first discipline. Yes. I never took out my papers here to register as an architect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I was allowed to do a lot of alterations to homes. In my previous home, in the area where I lived, I was asked to do a lot of alterations to homes. And I'm especially proud of the temple I designed here in Roslyn.
Really?
Temple Sinai. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I designed it in the first edition, second edition, third edition.
Really?
So that was a major job. Mm-hmm. But since then, I have not touched any architecture work.
Can you describe the Temple Sinai design?
It was a very small congregation when I first joined. I was one of the founding fathers, and our services took place here in a Presbyterian church. They had a very lovely reverend with whom we all adored, and he gave us his church to have our services. And then we had enough families to put up enough money to buy property here in Roslyn. And we I was the first chairman of the building committee.
Oh, yeah.
And I got the assignment, design us a temple, and here's a check for $60,000. And I built a temple for $58,000 and gave him back $2,000. And
what was the design like?
It's
modern?
It's very modern. Mm-hmm. And I had the help of Levitt.
The famous builder.
Levitt had built Strathmore, he had built the Country Club, and he had built out in Levittown the village greens, I think you called them. And we took the basic design of the village green building, which he gave me, mm-hmm. and I translated that into our main building, and I added to it, mm-hmm. and which made it very simple and very successful.
How do you spell Levitt?
L-E-V-I-T-T. And the building turned out very well, and the Levitt plumbing engineer by the name of Jelonek, that I don't want to spell, I befriended him, and he donated the entire heating and cooling system for the temple and helped tremendously in the layout of all the basics. And and the temple was added to and is still up and looks very good. Mm-hmm. So this is my architectural accomplishments in this. I changed my house extensively before I sold it, and turned out very well. And now I'm, of course, very happy with my wife's house here. Mm-hmm. It's just
in Roslyn Heights.
In Roslyn Heights, Long Island, yes.
Tell me, did you do any work with the Lowy organization that involved architecture or architectural?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. In the very first beginning, when we had an account by the Panama Line, we designed three ships uh-huh. for the Panama Line. The Panama, the Cristobal, and I forgot the third. And I was to detail quite a few of the interior areas, and I had terrible difficulties doing it because my background was in centimeters and not in inches. And it was awful, and I made many mistakes and till I learned. Mm-hmm. But and I did quite a few of architectural drawings and helped SNAF a great deal. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned before the WT Grant competition. We entered and had 24 hours to do it, and we got it mm-hmm. and helped him quite a bit whenever needed. Mm-hmm. I was the all-around man mm-hmm. and always available. Mm-hmm. And I spent
a little bit jack of all trades, it sounds like.
And I helped every department in the packaging and the so it's my experiences have I've learned really to be calling myself an industrial designer. I really a self-made industrial designer. Right. I never went to a school to learn it, but I learned it thoroughly through the employment by Raymond Lowy. And I taught for 6 or 7 years at Pratt Institute
in Brooklyn. One of the premier design.
Yes.
Industrial
and now I'm invited every year to address the graduating class of the industrial design class, and I've gone every year. Mm-hmm. It's a funny story how I stopped teaching at Pratt. One night, I came out after a class and went to my car. In Brooklyn, in the worst area, a section of Brooklyn, and drove to the corner of Ryerson Street. And I went straight into, through a street fight. Two gangs, one on either side, shooting at each other. I was so petrified with the bullets flying left and right and above me and that I stepped on the gas, got out of there, and never returned to Pratt. I resigned the next morning and said, this I don't need for my health, and that was it. But since then, of course, many, many, many years later, Joe Parriott, whom I mentioned before as a non-contributor to the Avanti project, and with whom I designed a taxi cab for the handicapped, asked me to address the graduating class every year, and I enjoy doing it. Yeah. mention very shortly my, do we have time left on the tape? The project of a taxi for handicapped people, which was very interesting. Joe Perriott and the school, Pratt Institute, had gotten a grant from Washington to develop a taxi for handicapped people. They got a grant from Washington to design a taxi cab for the handicapped. Mm-hmm. And the specs were so that a man, a woman in a wheelchair could get themselves into a taxi cab without getting out of the wheelchair, which is quite an assignment. They worked on this assignment for over half a year, and then Joe Perriott called me, would I give my time to supervise this thing? And I said I'd be delighted to. I went to Rikers Island, which is an island in the river here, which houses a tremendous hospital for the handicapped and retarded and the criminally insane. Mm-hmm. We were given a big room to do our design work there, mm-hmm. Which was without cost to Pratt or to us. And I couldn't believe what I saw there. They had started to build a mock-up of this taxi, and with all wrong dimensions. And this was based on the General Motors Citation front wheel chassis. Mm-hmm. And I took a few measurements and I said, take it apart, this is not right, it cannot work. Mm-hmm. And I went home and built at home a cardboard model of what it should look like, with the correct dimensions, where the door should be, and how the ramp should work. And they said, all right, go build it. So I spent hours and weeks and days with a few helpers from Pratt Institute to build a working mock-up. Mm-hmm. And we had help, of course, with the handicapped people at the hospital, mm-hmm. especially one lovely lady, a black lady who was run over by train and lost her two legs. Mm. And she needed counseling, and she spent a lot of time in the hospital, and she helped us. She volunteered to go in and out of the taxi of her prototype to see that the dimensions were right, mm-hmm. the door opening high enough. Mm-hmm. A very important part is people in wheelchairs can very hardly move their necks or heads forward in order to make more room to get into a low door. Right. So the door opening had to be 58 inches, which is tremendous. It's enough room for a person sitting erect in a wheelchair to go through without being forced to bend their necks. Well, my dimensions of the small model were correct, and we built this mock-up based on the Citation. And it turned out I designed a ramp that folds out of the door, hooks onto the sill. That's the word I was looking for,
sill, yes.
The sill, when we had the shorts in France, the sill. It hooks onto the sill and extends. The driver, of course, has to come out of the car and do that. Mm-hmm. But once it's installed, the slope of the ramp is flat enough that a wheelchair person can, by him or herself, get into the cab. Mm-hmm. Once in the cab, they can turn around, face the front, or stay sideways. Mm-hmm. And there were little anchors, little hooks, that they can, by themselves, hook onto the wheels of the car. The wheelchair would not move. Mm-hmm. When the wheelchair transportation was not needed, the same taxi was usable for four passengers, mm-hmm. three on the back seat and one jump seat. Mm-hmm. Well, the car was shown to many people, and there was great interest, and we had volunteers to build a working prototype, and then we were caught in the middle of a political thing here in the city of New York. It was either our taxi or the Veterans Administration's, which insisted that wheelchair persons can use the transportation system of the city. In other words, they insisted on having elevators put at main subway stations. Mm. And they won and we lost. Mm. So the grant, which was renewed two or three times, was not renewed, and they're in the process of building elevators at 15 main stations. They will not have operators. They will be self-operating units. And here in New York, you can imagine how long they will last. And the first person in the wheelchair will get mugged, mm-hmm. and 1 week later, the elevator will be out of service. The installation of each elevator is estimated in between $1.5 million to $2 million. So they're wasting these millions of dollars, while our taxi cab, which was based on an existing chassis, mm-hmm. with very little engineering to do, and fiberglass bodies, we could have created a fleet available with special telephones for the handicapped for much less money. Mm. And so it died a horrible death.
Very sad.
Very sad, yeah.
Marvelous.
I have photographs here to show you.
I think in the time we have remaining, which is very short, about 5 minutes, so would you like to sort of describe your design philosophy as it evolved over the years, your sense, your aesthetic sensitivity, your credo in a sense, could that be summed up?
I try to. That's mm-hmm. not going to be easy.
No.
I always maintained, and I will teach, and I taught my sons, don't put anything on paper that you can't do. We had an outstanding designer at the office. I don't want to mention his name.
At the Lowy office,
mm-hmm. who did fast and beautiful renderings and made beautiful presentations, but you could never build what he designed.
Really?
I will never present to a customer a drawing. God forbid he should say, do it, and you can't. This is my basic philosophy. I'm not the hottest designer. Nor the greatest designer, but I'm a sound designer.
Mm-hmm.
My interests are more in the technical end of things than in the aesthetic. I try to combine the two,
mm-hmm.
but I will not present to anybody anything that cannot be done,
mm-hmm.
be it in plastic and metal and in any medium. This is what I've lived by and will live by as long as I live. And it's not the most exciting design,
mm-hmm.
but it's sound design.
Mm-hmm.
And I take great pride in my color sense, and I established all the colors in the toy industry of what we needed. And I was very much in the selection of colors for the Avanti.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned during the Avanti period that Egbert had invited his friend Lamberti,
mm-hmm.
To join him in South Bend. Lamberti was a high school teacher, a school teacher, a very nice man, but had nothing to do with automobiles. One day I came back from lunch, and he said, John, look at the new color we just introduced. And I went into the showroom. There was a gray Avanti, and it looked like it was a prime coat.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate gray, mm-hmm. I battleship gray, and you could see every ripple in the fiberglass, and I said, it is ghastly, which didn't make me very popular with Lamberti, but thank God they never did it. Color studies are most important, and I take great pride in having good taste in colors. And I had a slow education in industrial design, and I must say, over the years, I've done good. The profession was good to me, and I was good to the profession. I did good design. I mentioned in a lot of magazines, and I'm proud of what I've accomplished through honesty in design. I will not present anything to anybody I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's does that sound sum up what?
I think that's the perfect ending. Thank you very much, Mr. Epstein, Mr. John W. Epstein of Roslyn, Long Island. We're very much in your debt.
I enjoyed it tremendously.
Thank you.
here, I mentioned before that Mr. Eckbert, kiddingly sometimes, mentioned that he designed the Avanti. I have here the document that he sent to Lowy, Rachel sent to Palm Springs, I think it says, to Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Eckbert.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel was the secretary
yes.
before Martha was there, Marthavich.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the sketch, if you will, that Mr. Eckbert did.
Ah, yes, uh-huh.
Can you, that
yes.
It's not really a sketch, it's
a
scribble.
The general outline that he wanted.
That he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis, in turn, this is Louis's handwriting,
mm-hmm.
Points to this and then he points to that. Louis put something onto the Jaguar and sent it back to him.
So
this is a very...
The Jaguar was the original inspiration for the Avanti.
Very, very much so, plus the Lincoln.
Mm-hmm, right.
Plus the Lincoln.
Yes.
The two of them were very influential in the
mm-hmm.
design of mm-hmm. the Avanti. Here is the first bill for my first Avanti, which was a very low, low number. And it's unbelievable. Delivery date was October 31st, 62, and the price was, total price was $3,940.65. Since then, the price has gone up somehow.
Trebled, I would think. This is an Automobile Quarterly.
The Automobile Quarterly, and I was interviewed. The man came to the office and sat down just the way we do it here
mm-hmm.
and taped me.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not tell me where he got my photographs from. These are my photographs. I told you that we took the side views and enlarged them over a whole wall to show
right.
Eckbert
yes.
how large they are.
Mm-hmm.
Where he got them from, he wouldn't tell me.
He didn't.
And to this day, I don't know how he got them. I don't know how he got this photograph.
Do you have any idea?
No idea.
No idea. Isn't that incredible?
Absolutely no idea.
This is the publisher or the author?
The author.
Mm-hmm.
The author. This yes. is Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I took the photograph. This is the car I built in Paris, in Sens.
Incredible.
So I never will I find out, because he isn't there anymore. This
is it a pretty good article?
A very good article.
Okay,
I mentioned very nicely,
mm-hmm.
and I get full credit for whatever I've done. And it's pretty accurate,
mm-hmm.
pretty accurate.
What's the date of the issue? Volume...
The volume 3, number 1... What year? I don't know. Does it say?
Yeah, that'd be on the spine, I think. It doesn't say. Well, we can look it up.
Yeah, but it's yours if you want it.
Thank you. Yes, very much.
Here are some pictures of the taxi I described.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I think it's quite interesting to see. It's all made out of cardboard and fully showing the wheelchair on my ramp, which falls out of the door.
Mm.
And it turned out to be quite a handsome, handsome machine.
Mm-hmm. Where was the workshop that you made this mock-up?
Right on the island here, in the Rikers Island.
Oh, really? Right on Rikers Island?
On Rikers Island. Mm-hmm. In the hospital. And every time I went there, I was scared because there were so many weird characters.
Oh, yes.
Here's the position of the wheelchair
mm-hmm.
with the door open.
Mm-hmm.
And
has anything like this surfaced since then? Is there a taxi that you can admit a handicapped person?
No. There are vans available now
that
have elevators that take
mm-hmm.
them.
Yeah.
But this one was a car to be used by a lot of people.
Mm.
Three in the back and plus a jump seat, which you see here.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Right.
It was quite nice.
It would have been quite innovative.
I was very happy with it, but
mm-hmm.
It died.
What happened to the model?
The model is still there.
Is it?
It stands on Rikers Island.
Is it?
In the room. And
you think you could get a hold of it, do you think?
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
I doubt
it. Still belongs to the...
And you cannot lift it anyway. You know,
I see.
It's, mm-hmm. I mentioned before the cardboard.
Yes.
Which proved to them that all their dimensions were wrong. This one has the correct dimensions between the wheels and the opening between the wheels.
This is which, what again?
That's just a taxi.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
You see that
yes,
mock-up. This
yes.
is what I did first before we got started.
Oh, marvelous.
It was a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
I was very proud of it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So sad that it never got into production.
Yeah, can't have everything. Yeah, I saved a few articles about the with the subway, the wheelchair,
yes.
About the fight that's going on.
Pro and con elevators. Yeah.
Yeah. And we lost. It's strictly political.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about or see Lowy's last book, Industrial Design, the one he...
Yes.
I have one with his inscription, which says that he couldn't have done it all without my help.
Oh, marvelous.
Very charming. And this was during the exhibit of the Avanti and his Raymond Lowy things in at the Smithsonian.
Designs of Raymond Lowy.
Yeah.
And that was in 1975.
Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they got an Avanti into the showroom and it's still there.
Really?
And they couldn't get it through, so in order to get it through, they had to put it on its side, I think somewhere.
Yeah, the aperture wasn't big enough?
No.
Oh.
Can you
yes.
see it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there it is on its side.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. In the Renwick Gallery.
Yeah. Which is almost across the street from the White House.
Mm-hmm. It's still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. And are you mentioned in the the label? I hope.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm very, very honored.
Good.
Again, here is the bicentennial issue, which
Lowy
sent me a copy. He
Chris,
Mr. It's Raymond. He wanted me to call him Raymond. So and there's only one page. The first page he wrote. Something.
To Johnny Epstein, a great fellow and an early member of the team, as ever, Raymond Lowy. That's marvelous.
Yeah, and here's
page 105.
Right here. This is the page devoted, which was a great honor, you know.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Lucky Strike, Greyhound.
Yeah.
What is the locomotive? Which one is that?
This is a K4S, before redesign.
Right.
This is a K4S.
And the
Coca-Cola
dispenser,
cooler,
the cooler and dispenser.
Yeah, I worked on all of them.
Did you really?
Sure.
And the
except that he did by himself.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
He wouldn't
the Lucky
anybody,
Strike.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. George Washington Hill.
Yeah,
that's marvelous.
And Forbes magazine shows just I don't know whether you saw this.
No,
that's
I didn't.
When Altman took over.
Oh yes.
After Avanti died and Studebaker died.
The post-Lowy Avanti.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He bought all rights, he and his partner Newman bought all rights to the Avanti for, I understand, $1, went into the old plant and resumed production, which was very hard to get it started because it's so hard to order 20 headlights, 20 this, 20 that, instead
yes.
of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But he did it and he was successful, was never in trouble, always in the black. Well, this guy, Steve Blake, almost ruined him, yeah.
What's your candid assessment of the post-Lowy Avanti? Was it a successful recreation?
Oh, very much so. It's done on the original dies.
Right.
And the only change on the body was lifting the whole front area up a little bit to create more room under the hood for a higher engine.
Higher engine.
Higher engine.
You mentioned at lunch this this elevation in the hood. Can you describe that in audio terms?
That was experimented with in Lowy's cars, the experimental cars he did. And it's a trick for race cars, which they have for them to go on 100, 120 miles an hour or faster to keep the car on a straight line. It's much easier to have an arrow in front of you showing where you want to go.
Exactly.
This is where this originated. He insisted on having this because there is no reason for it. There's no air cleaner underneath or
right.
no carburetor,
no.
nothing. It's the only excuse is it fades into the dashboard and the same hump is inside as outside. So. And he took great pains to locate it correctly. He did that. He and I.
You mentioned
the string.
That, yes, on
we
the
did
clay.
That, on the clay.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Before then, he had a little mark there with metal and plastic S, which Lowy over-decorates a little bit.
He
tends to. He tried to over-decorate. He had little insignias on the C pillar, and he wanted a great big side view mirror. Which was awful, and whenever Lowy wasn't there, and Ekbert said, take it off, you know. Whenever Lowy came, he put some on, and I had to take it off.
Oh, no.
And it's but the end result was still fine.
The Avanti has become a rather something of a cult automobile in the sense that it's regarded as a icon.
Classic.
A classic, really.
Yeah.
And it's still available as a true replica.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. It's not a replica.
No, it's not
it's
a really
made on the
it's made
original
dies. Original
dies.
It's really the Avanti reborn.
Yeah.
Yes.
The addition that was made to it, they took the metal bumpers off and put the plastic bumpers on, which are on my car, and which are not bad.
Uh-huh.
They blend in very nicely, and I think updated the automobile just a touch to keep it up to date.
Right.
And I don't mind it at all. It's nice. I love that automobile.
Oh,
you might ask, what's the roof line?
Yes.
The roof line explanation is, Loewy wanted the door to cut into the roof. Like all the new Audis and the Fords have. However, in progressing a little more, we found out we couldn't do it. Absolutely, it would have involved a very wide A pillar and a very wide B pillar to support all the parts that have to be supported, front and back. Glass cannot wrap into the roof. So it has there has to be part of the plastic panel. To be supported left and right. It couldn't be done. So we left that nice line which was inscribed to show the door line. We left it there, which I personally, you will see it on my car, I painted it black to blend in all the black other stuff.
Yes.
So it's...
it's a gorgeous vehicle. I'm so glad it's still being made.
Yep, they just resumed, as I told you, by Mr. Kelly of Dallas.
And reorganized.
And reorganized. Now, to the very end, I want to show you some more photographs,
please.
And we are finished.
All right. Describe them as much detail as you want.
I try to. I don't know what I've got in here. This is me 5 minutes before presentation to the board of directors with a full-size clay.
This is covered with the tarpaulin, and
yep,
you're in the Studebaker plant. And
yep.
And you're ready to unveil it. Huh?
Right. I must show you.
What was the reaction, by the way? Did you tell me what the director said?
A standing ovation we got.
Standing ovation.
A standing ovation.
Oh,
this is my clay monkeys working, the little model which was meaningless standing next to it.
Right. Would you like to memorialize some of your clay people?
I do not remember their names. Here's my group. And I'm with Gene Hardick, the chief engineer. And these were all the clay guys who worked 20 hours a day with me.
They're the unsung heroes of the industry, aren't they?
This is me working on the little clay model.
Does this survive the original clay model?
No.
No,
but in there you see a plaster model from all angles.
Yes.
That showed up. That's at the museum in South Bend.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It wound up with the widow of Mr. Altman, the one Altman brother died, and she had it. She wouldn't give it to anybody. She insisted that I get it, which was very sweet.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, yes, thank you very much, but I would love to give it to the museum in South Bend, where it is now. It's in existence, undamaged.
Wonderful.
This is the... this is the second Avanti of the line with Loewy, very proudly.
Who got the first one?
The first one was not driven. The first one is here. This
Who
is
got the second one?
I don't know. I can
did Ray, did Raymond Loewy take one of the first five or
no,
so?
No, he waited a while. This is the first one.
And who is that in the picture?
Me.
Of course it is, yes. The very first one off the line.
Yeah, this is number two off the line. This is our group in Palm.
Can you...
Tom Kellogg and Andrews, Loewy and myself and his dog.
And what are you doing in Palm Springs? You're showing him the first clay model?
This was the first clay model. On a mirror, you can see the mirror. This is half a clay model.
Oh, yes.
And if you look very close, it really doesn't look like an Avanti. as I said before, the clay model didn't do anything.
But he was Loewy was very pleased with
it. He was pleased, and especially Egbert flew in, and he was tickled pink. This is Egbert with Loewy with the second Avanti.
A tall, good-looking gentleman.
Again, this is the same photograph, I guess. This is in front of the house in Palm Springs. I was the slave driver. I woke everybody up, and I wouldn't let them go to sleep till we were finished. This is me with a full clay model.
Yes, that's closer, yeah.
And this is the full-size clay.
Did you ever make a fiberglass prototype?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Does that exist?
No.
It's gone now.
No.
Yeah.
This is Joe Dolas.
A seeding buck?
Bob Dolas.
Was it the first seeding buck?
Yep.
It has survived pretty much in that form, has it?
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's pretty close to what it looks like.
What it is today, yes.
Yeah. This is the model that exists.
Ah, this is the one in South at the
in the museum.
Museum in South Bend. Yeah, good.
This is unimportant. Mm-hmm. Unimportant. Here are three transparencies. The station wagon follow-up.
Was it ever done?
No.
The Avanti station wagon, was it seriously considered?
Yep.
How far? You got it to prototype form?
No, only drawing form.
Only drawing form.
Yeah, this was another facelift for the Avanti.
Which never came off?
Never came off, and this is the Avanti convertible. I'm sorry. Yeah. Which is being built currently.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's the next model.
Yeah, They're building 20 of them.
Was there ever, was an Avanti II ever considered?
Yes, there was. When Newman and Altman started producing the car again, it was called the Avanti II.
Right, that's what I thought.
But yes, Steve Blake took over, mm-hmm. he dropped the II.
Uh-huh.
He put new bumpers on the plastic wraparound bumpers, mm-hmm. and took the II off and just called it Avanti.
What are the current owners considering? They're going to leave it.
Leave it alone.
Yeah, good.
I told you about the production of the car in France.
Oh yes, in that medieval courtyard.
Right. Have a good look.
Oh, there you
this
are.
This is this not that. No, that's one of my cheat metal.
But
workers.
I mean, here's the.
Those are the sections I had to do, and with a paper still glued to it.
Incredible.
And mounted on 2x4s, and mm-hmm. they are fitting little pieces of metal to it.
Oh, this is the medieval craftsman hammering out the metal pieces.
Here's the proud papa. He had nothing to do with it. You know, just make sure it's finished.
Did he
time.
Come down?
Once in a while.
Once in a while.
He called all the time. All the time on the telephone.
And this is your.
That's the little model.
The model that you're working from. Yes.
Here's the front almost finished.
This is in.
In outside Paris.
The name of the company again.
Pichon et Parra.
Right, yes.
As you see, we have a flat floor, and it's supported by metal rods. No way to get under the car.
Incredible.
And it's absolutely incredible.
How you ever got a prototype out of that,
I'll never know. You saw the car, the photograph of Loewy standing here in the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
That's this car.
Good heavens. Incredible. And you took the picture?
I took the pictures. And I must show you something. Turn that off for a second.
Right. In 1981,
we were invited to come to South Bend to be honored as Studebaker designers.
Right.
And here you see it's Studebaker designers and me pointing to it.
At the Century Center in South Bend.
Yeah, which is a gorgeous building. Mm-hmm. A gorgeous building.
Mm-hmm.
And I was especially honored by the young man who runs it. If you mm-hmm. look for the name, I'll find it.
All right, fine.
Mm-hmm. And here are some pictures that are unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
This is Louis's daughter who attended.
Laurence. How do you spell that? L-A-U-R-E-N-C.
L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E.
Right, uh-huh.
This is Andrews.
And Bob Andrews, uh-huh.
Me.
And who's this here?
An Israeli artist who at the time was her boyfriend.
Oh, I see, okay.
And this Tom Kellogg with Laurence.
Oh, Tom came to the...
Yeah,
to
Tom
the,
came.
Oh, wonderful. That
Tom came.
This is that crew-cut young man who was helping you out in Palm Springs,
uh-huh. He's a wonderful guy.
Oh, marvelous.
And what I wanted to show you, this Bob Burke.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. This is Duncan McRae.
Right. Uh-huh.
This Cotto.
Bob Cotto.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And his wife.
Uh-huh.
And here's a young man whose name I forgot.
The museum man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. This is Altman.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And it was unbelievable. And all of a sudden, we were in front of... this car was the first or second Avanti out,
mm-hmm.
right here.
Right.
And there was a thing covered, and I didn't know what the hell it was.
Uh-huh.
And I was asked in front of all these people, take it off, and there was my plaster model.
Oh, he had gotten it back.
He had gotten it back, and then it wound up at Mrs. Altman, and she had insisted that I get it.
And
another surprise was when the car that I built in France, they found.
Oh, no.
And I don't know whether I photographed it or not. I didn't here, but it's in the museum. It's in the museum.
The one that you built in France?
Yeah. They found it somewhere. So I don't know where. It's cleaned incredible. It up and took it in the museum.
What a marvelous reunion this must have been for you.
It was.
Oh, that's marvelous.
I thought I took a photograph of the car.
There is a picture here. I thought I had the next one here.
No, this is the Avanti assembly line.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In good old days. This is Otis Romine, I mentioned.
Oh, yes,
This is a telephone call, Altman calling Lowy in France.
And he talked to all of you?
We talked to all of
you. Oh, yes,
It was lovely,
it
must have been. Too bad I didn't take a photograph of the car.
Oh, yes, it's still down there? They have it on display?
Yep, mm-hmm. It's there.
Oh, that's great. Well, that was a fitting epilogue to a long and fascinating career, I suspect.
Yeah, it was fun. Great fun.
Well, we're much obliged to Mr. Epstein very much for this enlightening look into your industrial design past. We hope that you will continue to be hale and hearty and will be doing more design work in the future.
I hope so. If you need any of the photographs, I lend them to you gladly.
Thank you. We would like to copy some of them.